Welcome to Sustainable Hope for Parents of Special Needs Children. I'm your host, Reverend Kate McGee, and I'm so proud to present this podcast as part of my doctorate work with Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary. A special thank you to Diaconess Solutions and Synod of the Son for the scholarships they have given me to pursue this work as I explore the intersection of faith and special needs. In this first episode, we are going to look at the dangers of fake hope. In this world, as parents of special needs children, there's a lot that goes wrong. There's a lot that's unpredictable. There's a lot that's uncertain. And we get through day by day with a dose of hope. As a pastor at Westminster Presbyterian Church in Arlington, hope is very much what I do, what we do here at church. And yet it is also a muscle that we have to work out, that we have to use, that we have to practice. So we're going to start this episode by introducing my conversation partners. In addition to being a pastor and a doctoral student, I'm also the mother of three lovely boys. And my youngest son has the diagnosis of autism, as well as some developmental delays. This has meant a variety of things over the past almost 8 years since we brought him home from foster care. Cohen loves Legos. He loves YouTube. Cohen wants to be a baker who only bakes sugar cookies with icing. He is also, at this point, 11 years old and is in fifth grade. He is in a special education class where he has some very special teachers for him and the 10 other boys that are in this classroom. I love that my child is full of love and hugs and kisses. And I pray that he always thinks the world of me like he does now before he turns into a teenager. So, Jennifer, you want to introduce yourself?
Sure. My name's Jennifer, and I'm the mom of two kids. My youngest, Clayton, is 10, and he has a diagnosis of moderate to severe autism. He's minimally verbal. He uses a little AAC device, an iPad, to talk. We're getting a whole lot more words lately, and it's pretty fun. You know, he'll come over to me and say up, and I'm like, okay, I stand up, and then he'll give me a hug, and I'm like, oh man. So he attends ABA, Applied Behavioral Analytics, I think is what it stands for, full time, and that's been awesome. And then his older sister Whitney is 12, and she's got some severe ADHD, so our house is pretty crazy, but fun. And I guess what I love the most about Clayton is his laugh. His laugh can turn any bad day, any crummy situation into you just sit down and laugh with him. He's a crazy kid. Pass it on to you, Jess.
My name is Jessica Hinojosa, and I have an 18-year-old son, and I have a 12-year-old little boy named Evan. He has trisomy 4, and that is a rare chromosome disorder. It's a genetic disorder, and it really has touched almost every organ in his body, so he's had a lot of medical issues. Right now, he is minimally verbal. He does also use an AAC device, but he's very expressive. So he will get his point across some way or another. He does use sign. He's also G-tube fed, so he doesn't eat solid foods by mouth. He's got pretty severe IDD as well. And he's also like a huge bundle of joy and energy. And that's probably my favorite part of him, is that he has no chill, zero chill. He is very on the go, ready to go, and lives his best life every single day. So I think that's probably my favorite part of him. And we are just like a family of 4, but our oldest one went off to college, so it's kind of been a big change this last year.
Who knows, up and down.
Well, and what's really cool about our boys is, of course, depending on the day, depending on their mood, but they all generally enjoy baseball.
Yes, they do.
We are all Miracle League moms on the same team. Go Red Sox. And to get out there and run around and watch them be cheered on by parents on both teams and by grandparents and by friends is an absolute joy to to watch them in their element, especially Evan, who, although minimally verbally, is probably the most communicative kid on the team.
That is 100% true. That kid is like Babe Ruth. Like, let me point out where I'm going to hit.
Absolutely.
Love it.
He's ready to slide home every single base, too.
And if the cheers aren't loud enough, he'll let you know.
He will. So something that has been really helpful in my life as the parent of a special needs kid has been the understanding and reception that I have found at church. I know our church is not every church, but at our church we have a critical mass of kids and young adults with special needs, especially autism, and our church has received them like they are anyone else in this church. They understand that Cohen may be louder sometimes. They have given up the expectation that children should be seen and not heard.
It's amazing.
Which is wonderful. And that is one thing that keeps me going, is my faith that God loves Cohen just as much as God loves any of the rest of us. That God sees exactly who Cohen is and knows him intimately. And that faith background has given me a lot of hope to keep going every day, that God's mercies will be new every morning, even when I don't feel like I can wake up and do this again. So would you guys share a little bit about your faith backgrounds and how that has or hasn't affected your parenting journey?
For me, I grew up, I guess I joke and say we were the holiday Catholics. You know, we went to church on the holidays with my grandmother, and then after she passed away, we didn't attend services regularly. And then I married Ryan. Ryan grew up very much attending church on a regular basis, a very big part of his life. So after having kids, we tried to find some churches that fit in, and it's just difficult. I mean, you know, it's either me going with Clayton to Sunday school and Ryan attending the main service, mm-hmm. or the church, bless them. I mean, they tried to help us, and there was a group of kids that really wanted to potentially become teachers and things like that. And so they buddied up with Clayton, but then they graduated. And the only thing they could offer was a kid that was about the same size as Clayton and probably 20 pounds less. And I was like, this is not a good idea. So we've kind of struggled to find anything with that.
I did not grow up going to church, and my husband did grow up with church, with very deep Catholic Hispanic culture. I didn't start going to church until probably as an adult, when Evan was maybe like one or something like that, when he was healthy enough for us to go to church. And it was a wonderful experience. And then he kind of grew up a little bit, and he was not really upset, but just crying to be in there. And so it became harder. It just became a situation where they did try, but there was just, if I would bring up a suggestion, like, hey, what if somebody, like a little buddy could come in, or his brother, they would just be like, no, we need you to come in to the thing. And that's where it became like, well, I'm not getting what I need from church.
Exactly.
So it's harder for me to be like, well, let's just keep going, because how long is this going to be? You know, so that was my time to try to connect with, you know, with Jesus, with God. And it would just became a harder situation where it just, for me, it was just like, I'm so tired of fighting every single thing. I can't continue to do this. So we have stopped, taken a break from going to church. Although I'm still Christian. I still, you know, we still have a relationship. It's just hard for me to get to church. And that has kind of soured me on the actual going into the building. So honestly, that's where it is.
Well, and that's a challenge when church becomes one more work, yes. one more thing mom has to do,
mm-hmm.
rather than a place where you can relax into your relationship with God and not have to constantly worry about how is my kid, how are other people seeing my kid, do they think he needs to be quiet? Are they shooting him mean looks? Maybe, I hope you guys never experience that, but that is the reality of many public places where we try to take our children.
Shoot, I mean, I was very adamant about wanting to understand what the church thought that we tried to dive into, and we met with the family pastor, and I was like, hey, you know, I've gotten some mixed signals and things. I want to understand how we feel about Clayton. And he's like, man, the main pastor was really glad you didn't call him. And I was like, oh, okay. And he's like, yeah, I mean, you know, I'll tell you what us as a pastoral staff believe, but I can't say that's what everybody in this church will say about Clayton and how Clayton's relationship with God goes. And I was like, terrifying. Okay.
It's terrible.
Okay, I'm not so sure about all this. And so then it just, you know, kind of exactly the way Jess said it.
And that's so hard when a place that should be a refuge and a sanctuary becomes another battle to fight, because that's the world as it is designed right now. It is not designed for the delightful people that are our children.
No.
It is not designed for moms who try to work and maintain and love our marriage and, oh, what, by the way, our other children.
Exactly.
It is so much that it feels like we are battling at the doctor's office or even to get an appointment, you know, that we are battling at school, we are battling with a work-life balance, and, you know, my guess is y'all are like me, and we rarely even think about what a social life looks like. Is this the most social gathering I might have this week? Maybe so.
I think what's hard sometimes is that you have this, when we were talking about hope, like you have this every time you get a new doctor or if you try a new school, and you have this huge hope like, okay, this is it. If we try these things differently, this, and this will work and we'll find our space, we'll find our place. And then we go to the doctor and I have to tell him what trisomy 4 is. And it's like, okay, this is not the answers I was hopeful for and expecting. And the same thing with church, like, oh, you know, like we're going in there, we're hoping. But when you hear something like that, like, yeah, oh, the main pastor doesn't feel right, confident. It doesn't just knock you back down to where you were. It like knocks you down even lower. So then you have to continually climb just to get back to a baseline, to a neutral space where you feel like, oh, let me try something else. Let me try another doctor or another church or another school, whatever it is. I think that's the hardest part, is that the world is not designed for people like our kids. So our baseline is here, but we keep getting knocked lower. So it's so much harder just to even get to the baseline, besides having like very positive interactions or very positive feedback from people. So I think that that is one of the harder things to just, when you, before you have your children, it's hard to like even understand something like that. And you don't really learn that and can acknowledge it and understand what it means until you've lived it already for a few years, you know, and you're like, okay, I'm strong enough that I can handle this blow, but I know it's not the end, you know?
Yeah.
But it's hard to get there, even.
Absolutely. Or even arriving at, like, Ryan will ask me, like, the church thing. I mean, Ryan grew up in a very religious household, and he's like, you knew what they were going to say. Why did you ask them? And I'm like, because someone needs to bring it to their attention that's not good, that's not right, that's, if I can have the strength and the hope that maybe I can help change something or bring something to a different person who has not walked in our shoes, their life, then okay, that's my hope. I hope that I can help someone not have to go through what I did, you know?
And it's almost like, as parents of special needs kids, we're not just moms and dads and mamas and papas, we're their advocate.
Their voice.
Which is a lot of pressure. Mm-hmm. So much pressure for us.
I remember one of the first times I took Cohen to the doctor, and they looked at me and said, well, you're the mom, you're the expert on him. And I sat there
Well,
first of all, thanks to the gift of adoption, I've only known this kid about 6 weeks. I know nothing about him. I need help. And how often do we cry out for help and it's met with, I'm glad I didn't meet with you,
yeah,
or, you know, oh, let me pass this along to someone else,
yeah,
or, you know, seeing people's face when they look overwhelmed by our children.
Yes. You stop answering the question truthfully of how are you. It's like, I'm good. Because if it's you, I can tell you, I know you get it. But if it's somebody else off the street, it's just like, no, you can't handle this, you know?
So it's almost like there's a level of isolation.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
When we see everybody's back to school pictures on Facebook, you know, it reminds me that my life doesn't look like their lives. Yeah. And we all know social media is people's best foot forward.
Yeah.
But this idea, when I watch a lot of kids go through milestones that I know my child will never have, mm-hmm, or the fact at 11, our life has been totally change for the better because Cohen can now buckle himself and unbuckle him in the car.
Hey, big deal.
It is so exciting, especially in that drop-off and pick-up line. But, you know, so this idea that it's almost constantly in our face that
we're different.
The world is not made for us.
Yeah.
And not just that our kids are different, but the variety of ways we are told our kids are less.
Absolutely.
And that's why when we find little pockets of things that we are so, that is a blessing for us, you guys already, you know, Miracle League, these things you just hold on tight to because this is your hope. These are the things when you've already had 10 things that were not, you know, giving you hope, but you find that one thing and you're like, oh, these are my people. And, you know, you just see somebody and you're like, oh, that kid, you're my person.
Yeah. You don't know me,
but I'm with you. We're together. You know, it's one of those things that you just hold on to things that are really special because we don't have a lot of opportunities for our kids, for
us
to be able to, like, you know, we can't join a normal baseball team, especially at 12 years old. They're like literally on steroids, you know, so for us to be able to have these kind of connections, I think are one of the most positive things that are in our lives, in our kids' life as well.
Ryan teases, he's like, do we do Miracle League for Clayton or for you? And I'm like, it's for me. It's straight up for me. You know,
because the kid loves it.
Yeah.
And because you see the other people, the other moms, and we're like, oh, somebody else is struggling. Thank God I'm not the only person struggling. You know, like, thank God that these other people, you know, like, you just see some of the same struggles, but you don't see them as struggles. You just see them as like a likeness for, you know, the people around you.
Relatable.
Mm-hmm.
Have y'all ever had this happen to us a couple weeks at Texas Roadhouse? Plug for their rolls. Maybe they'll send me some for free. But, you know, there was a mom on her way out who stopped. I did not know this person, but when she approached us, I always had to kind of flip through that Rolodex in my brain going, do I know her? And she said, well, does your child have autism? Because Cohen wears his headphones out in public and, you know. But usually I have learned that people who ask that have some connection with autism at least, right? And so I just smiled. I said, yes, he does. And she started telling me about a relative of hers who has a kid with autism. And she wanted to know, did those headphones help?
Oh.
Now, did we exchange names?
No. Never.
It went right into that, just what you were talking about. Likeness. Yeah. I see someone like me. I see someone like my relative. I see someone, and I can ask these questions that may feel a little intimate, but here's someone who instantly understands of what it can cost, and I'm not talking about money, simply going out to a restaurant. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Of how can we make that possible? Yeah. What is ordinary for so many families? How can we make that? And if headphones will make a difference, I will absolutely tell you the brand and where I bought them from and how that works for us. You know, that we instantly are in that relationship and wanting to help each other.
It gives you hope.
Yes. It does.
You're like, oh, look, okay, somebody else who might get it and I might not judge me and might think that my kid's kind of cute, you know?
Yeah. And I think that's one of the main things of like growing into the space that we're in now is that we were the ones who were like just grasping, like, anybody, please help me. And now we can be the ones to be like, let me help you. It would give me joy to help you. You know, it would give me like just fulfill my own thing to help somebody else, because that's what you want to do is we're a small but mighty group. And so we just want to help each other and like be successful the best way we can do it in our own space.
Mm-hmm. To have some sense of joy and love and hope in our lives. Right. So in this first episode, we're talking a little about the need for hope, but we know there's a lot of things out there that people want to sell us as hope that are not actually hope. So we believe that we all have the capacity to hope, that hope is not something you earn or buy at the store or something get, but that we are born with the capacity to hope. And one of the reasons we're having this conversation is this is working out our muscle of hope, to figure out how we can keep having that so that when we get knocked down lower to that pit, you know, the Psalms talk a lot about a pit, and then my Princess Bride fangirl comes out and say the pit of despair, right? And when we get knocked down into that pit, you know, are there things we can hold on to in our life that will make it, maybe make a ladder to climb out of that pit rather than making new handholds every time? How far can I push this metaphor? You know, hope is not a prediction, right? Hope is not, if I just do X, Y, and Z, then my kid will progress linear academically, right? Hope is not, if I can find the right doctor, all my kid's special needs will go away. Or if I just cut out red dye, all of Cohen's autistic behaviors will disappear. Not saying, for some people and for some families, that is a real solution that helps with things. But also, that's not hope. Mm-hmm. We also know that hope is not toxic positivity, right? Mm. Not this thing that says you have to have a smile on at all times, or that you're not allowed to feel your real feelings, that you're not allowed to feel disappointed. Sometimes toxic positivity looks like the silver linings, you know, or the minimizing, right? Well, at least your kid can play baseball. At least your kid can walk. At least your kid, you know, in my case, can talk. You know, there's also the toxic positivity that is this vague assurances. Well, everything's just going to work out all right. You just have to trust the process.
Yeah.
Is that what hope
Don't worry
like?
About it. Trust it, you know, trust God. You know, he's got a plan. I'm like, but I need to know what that plan is. Somebody tell me what that plan is, because that is daunting, and it is hard to, especially when you're not in a place where it's easy to receive hope, it feels worse.
It makes it so much harder. I mean, I've been told by someone close, you know, I mean, you just need to rest assured that this is what God's plan was for Clayton, and he will receive more riches in heaven. And I'm like, yeah, but that doesn't help me today. You know, I can't just go to sleep at night and off stress, because I know that when he gets to heaven, even though some people don't think he'll go to heaven, apparently, you know, he'll be treated and taken care of better there. It blows my mind what will come out of people's mouths.
And they're so well-intended. You know, like, one of the best things about church is that people really want to rally with you. Mm-hmm. They want to rally and support you. But sometimes it's just, they don't know how. That's most of the world just, it's hard to understand unless you've lived it. And unfortunately, if you haven't lived it, it's hard to know what are the best things to say.
I know, it blows my mind. I always talk to my mom about, why can't people just say, I'm here for you.
Yes.
Like, that's the easiest, most, even if it's empty and you don't really mean that I can call you, that's a lot better than telling me, well, at least your kid doesn't have cancer. Okay, well, cool. You're right. At least he doesn't have cancer, but we do have a lot of other things we deal with.
Right.
Well, and it's like, and then there's almost like the shame that comes with
that. Yes.
About, you know, how dare you think your life is hard, not recognizing there is a spectrum of hardness in living, and that this is our particular harder way. And I always want to be clear, it's not harder because of who our kids are. It's harder because of how the world is set up. That the world is not set up to understand that my son is going to verbally stim at the library and jump up and down and be excited that he got good books. So you want to have this idea that library is going to be a quiet place. Mm-hmm. My kid finds it as a source of joy.
Right.
And the problem is not my kid finding joy in reading. The problem is those people who want to shush him and want to tamp down and put him in this box that he doesn't fit in.
Ryan and I've had that conversation before where he's like, it's just so hard because you get tired of explaining it. He's like, I don't feel like I should have to explain that Clayton's happy, that this is okay, and this is what he does. You might turn and give somebody a high five when you're happy. He shakes his hands, and that's okay. And I'm thinking, like, I've got to take the opportunity to explain to him that this is autism and that's okay. You know, I mean, it's very interesting.
That's interesting to hear, because I also feel like the same thing is that I want to teach. I want to have every single opportunity to educate the world, to educate. This is what this is, and this is what you can do. But man, it is exhausting.
It is.
Absolutely exhausting to always feel like. And then if we missed that opportunity, like, God, and then I put hard on myself because I missed the opportunity to, like, help somebody else. And I'm like, I can only do this one person can only do so much.
Absolutely. I thought about that when Clayton did, he was in public school for a short amount of time. And there was this mom that kind of latched onto me and in maybe a little bit different levels. And I was like, God, I mean, I should tell her all these things that she should and she is entitled to legally. And then finally I just had like that moment, like you said, like, I've got to take care of me. Like, I can't be everybody's person, but I certainly do appreciate the opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if this has been y'all's experience, but when kids ask me, why does Cohen jump? They are so receptive. When I say, hey, do you know how when you get excited about something and you want to jump up and down? Yeah, that's what Cohen's doing. And I just tell them his brain's a little different. Yeah. I don't even have to use autism. And they just go, okay, and go about their lives. And I think if we could all sort of have that open posture
absolutely.
To learning about differences and that idea that, oh, okay, yeah, no, I understand that. That is something I want to do and I try to relate to. And
It's funny you bring that up. Like, I feel like I took that opportunity. Ryan comes from a big family and there's 7 grandkids total. And I think sometimes we're just going to push it under the rug. We're not going to recognize. And I was like, dude, the kids are getting older. And so for Christmas one year, there was this awesome book that an autism mom wrote called Why Won't You Look at Me? Why Won't He Look at Me? And so I bought that for each family and gave that to them. And both of my sister-in-laws came back and said, that was amazing. The kids started out. It opened a dialogue. And then maybe it's in my head, maybe it's not. But it felt like the boys started being more inclusive of Clayton. Like, come with us instead of just like, eh. You know, one of the youngest ones was like, they did an autism awareness day at his school. And he's like, can I bring Clayton? You know,
and I was that's like, so sweet.
You know?
And those are the best things. Yeah. Like, whenever you... Because it's hard. It's hard to be like, how do you start a conversation that's on a kid's level or on an adult level? Like, what's the level that, you know, you can kind of connect with somebody?
And
to find that is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, you know, they find it uncomfortable sometimes too, because I'm just an open book. I mean, you just have to be almost. And so I'm like, let's talk about this. And it's like, no, this is our life. And if you're going to be a part of it, you got to know what's going on, you know?
Hint. I talk to adults and children the same way.
I will have to take note of that because
it is written for the average 13-year-old. So we all know these ideas of that it can be hard to find hope, and then there's these little glimmers.
Yes.
And that's, to me, some of the fuel that keeps me going.
Absolutely.
Is when you've explained it to someone and they get it and they modify their behavior, or they learn how to check on you, those kind of things.
Really, or even like I've found, because we've been with the same Miracle League team, not to bring it back to Miracle League, but we've been with the same team with the same kids for several years, and we've seen some of the kids progress, and the pride and the almost shock, I hate to say shock, but I can't think of a better word, that you see in their parents' face, or they're like, oh my God, he can do it. And it's like, yeah, your kid can hit coach pitch. And they're like, he just hit the ball. And I'm like, he did. It's awesome. And those moments just make me just so happy. They fill me up.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, and maybe that's a hope practice we'll revisit about how to store things away.
Yes.
For the rainy days. another thing hope is not optimism. And I'm not saying it doesn't hurt to be optimistic sometimes. It doesn't hurt to think about our kids' ability at baseball in an optimistic light. But optimism is so dependent on external circumstances lining up a particular way, right? Optimism is that believing things will work out for the best. Whereas hope is much more magical. It's putting forth the possibility of the unknown. About, I don't know how this is going to work out. And yet I hope. Mm-hmm. I don't know what school is going to hold for Cohen. And yet I show up every day, I get him dressed, and I drop him off at school. Right? I don't know where this is going to all lead. But hope are the things that guides me. Whereas optimism might say, of course he's going to have a great day. Let's, you know, manifest the positivity and say, you're going to have a great day.
Every day before Clayton goes to ABA, I'm like, be the best boy. Just be the best boy today. I picked it up from another mom and I was like, oh, maybe if I just speak it over him, it will be a good day.
And sometimes that's not bad, right? Yeah. It's not bad to have optimism in a world that continually tells us our kids are less, you know, it's not bad to be optimistic, but we have to be sure that we're not conflating that with hope.
Very true.
Right? Because if something in that external circumstance changed and we can no longer be optimistic, we still have to have hope.
Yeah.
Right.
I've talked a lot with Ryan about that because Ryan's like the eternal optimist and just, hey, this is it. This is our life. And, you know, it could be worse. It could be better, but this is our life. And I'm like, I get that, but I need you to meet me sometimes in the middle and say, this is hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not asking to dwell on it. I'm not asking to say this sucks. I'm not saying that I would change anything. I'm just saying I need you to say that you feel like this is hard too, so I don't feel as crazy. And he's like, well, of course it's hard. I mean, why would I have to tell you that? And I'm like, because that's what I need.
Right, so to how you feel, to validate, like, yeah, things are crappy.
Yeah.
So, you know, just understand, just to say it out loud so you don't feel like you're the only person and the only person struggling whenever your partner, your husband is like, you just have to look at it this way. And it's
I want to solve it. I want to solve the problem. This isn't something you can solve. I just need you to say, this is hard.
Yeah.
And that lets
we're
me
here
have,
together.
Yes. And that lets me keep having hope that it will change and that we might have a better day the next day or the next time that Clayton goes into the kitchen, he doesn't open up a can of seasoning for barbecue and dump it everywhere. You know, I mean, he was having fun.
Mm-hmm. Or the time Cohen tried to make pancakes on his own.
Oh, that's got to be a good story.
A New Year's morning to remember. I was tired of waiting for anybody else to get up to make him pancakes.
Does Cohen know it's New Year's? Like, that's the day everybody's supposed to sleep.
He can know that and refuse to participate.
He's like, no, I'm not doing
this.
There's
too much day to not miss.
Hey.
Too much TV to not
live your best life
watch.
Every day.
That's right.
And so I think that's the reality, you know, and it's good to have people who will be optimistic for us when we can't.
Right.
But I think hope is not a afraid of saying things are hard. Hope is not afraid of a realistic or practical outlet, right? Mm-hmm. Hope is not about denying the reality that we live in.
Right. That's what Ryan and I talked a lot about. It's like, I'm not being negative. I'm just saying this is hard. That doesn't mean I don't have hope. That doesn't mean that I don't still love the kid. It's just, this is hard. You know? That makes a lot of sense.
And I think, you know, that's a great way to say, this is why we're doing this podcast.
Absolutely.
Is so that someone else may need to hear someone say, this is hard. This
or, I don't know what to say, but I'm here for you. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't have the best words, but know that I'm, you know, and not just say, if you need anything. No, say, hey, I'm going to bring you a cup of coffee. Yes. Let me bring you a cheesecake. That's the best thing I've ever heard from somebody. Bring me a cheesecake with chocolate and strawberries. Drop it off on my porch. I don't even want to see anybody, but thank you for my cheesecake. Yes. You know, it's one of those things that are just, you just need to know that other people see and they believe you, they validate you without saying, oh, just, it'll be, you know, like things will be okay. I know, you know, like, okay, I know things will be fine, but I feel like crap right now.
Yeah.
So it's like hope says it's okay. There's not a solution for
this. Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Yes.
Right. And what we need is people to say, I'll hope for you when your hope is thin.
Mm-hmm.
I'll pick you up with a cheesecake when you've been knocked into that pit. I will be there on hopeful days and on hopeless days. I will be there when you're feeling optimistic and when you're feeling pessimistic. Mm-hmm. I will be there on the days when everything goes right. Guys, a couple weeks ago, Cohen had like a perfect 24 hours and it was so good. That's 8 years. One perfect day. You know.
Hey, but that one perfect day.
But then I try to be sure to tell the people in my life that what a good day we had. Yeah. So when the next one's not that, they can help hold that hope for me and say, it's not always going to be this.
Remember this.
Yeah. And that power of community that we have.
I think that that's one of the things also whenever we feel like, at least for Evan, he had such medical issues that now that we're okay and we're stable, it's been a few years since he's had anything really major. We're like, oh, that was like a lifetime ago. I mean, the kid's 12. That was like maybe 3 years ago. But, you know, for us, it feels like we've made it to the other side now. We're okay. So it's just, you know, there is that hope. And I think my baseline is hopeful. But whenever it's not, man, like, it knocks you down, but I always feel like it can only knock you down for a little bit as long as you have people or somebody to help you just to say, this is I understand, you know, and I get it. But when you're ready, come on, let's chat. I know you're not ready now. I'm not going to ask you 15 million questions because that is the hardest thing to do when you just don't want to talk anymore. But they're there when they do, and they come with cheesecake. And food is the way to my soul, okay, everybody? Remember that. Love that.
So attention to all of Jessica's friends out there. She would like all the cheesecake and the coffee, please, and thank you. And anything sweet is certainly a balm to our souls.
Or queso. Oh, everybody queso. Take note. Chips and queso.
Let's go. Let's go.
So yeah, I think this is a good way to wrap up this first episode, talking about what hope is not. And the places that we find hope.
I think one of my things was this year has been hard because he transitioned, Evan transitioned into a bigger school. So it's intermediate school now. So it's no longer elementary. They don't have cute little parties and things like that anymore. And this year was really difficult because we had a teacher who quit after 1 month.
Oh, wow.
And for that next month and a half, it was just other teachers in that school who already had their own classrooms, all just rotating in for an hour, hour and a half. And it was not fun because my kid would come home with like signings of like, bad day, bad day, bad day. And he's not a kid that has bad days. So it was trying to figure out who was in his class. And when there's a rotating door with kids who were like, I need structure, that was absolutely not happening. So in January, no, maybe before that, December, we had a new teacher, and she has completely changed the landscape in that classroom. Everything is so much better, and now we're getting all positive things. Where he's getting, I don't know, every couple of days we get an artwork, and it's personalized to Evan. So yesterday we got one with the little face and his little red glasses. Aww. And his little sports jersey that he wore that day. And it's just like things like that. You know, somebody is up there and loving on your child. And they see him, and they, you know, took the time to like create something. So I think that was just such a hopeful way for me to think school is the best thing that could happen for Evan, because I can't do it. I am not an educator by any means. I have no patience, but to know when I drop him off that he is in good hands. And that's all you can hope for whenever you don't see him for the majority of the day. That's all you can hope for.
For our kids, can't really tell us what happened or how the day was, you know. Clayton's ABA center, they started putting on his AAC device, on his AAC device, pictures of different people, and he will ask for them on the weekend.
Oh, I love that.
And I'm like, dude, like, what's wrong with mom? Miss, you know, Miss Candace isn't available. She's got her own family. And he's like, I want Candace. I want Terry. And I'm like, dude. And then the other day, I was just playing with him, and I don't really know if he understood what I meant, but he kept asking for Terry. I said, is Terry your girlfriend? And he goes, yeah. And I was like, ah. And so then I tell her, and she lights up, and she's like, yeah, you know, but.
And it probably gives them hope every single day too. Whenever you, because that's, as an educator, wouldn't you just love to know that your student is over there and he loves school and he's happy
and he wants to be
to come and he's asking for you by name.
Exactly.
For a person who can't speak, who's nonverbal, that is huge. I love that.
That was a win for sure. I was like, look at you.
Well, and I think you just named an important thing of hope for me. It's when you find people who see your kid.
Yes.
Beyond the behaviors, beyond the diagnosis, that Cohen has a para who sees him as an adorable, hilarious kid who, needs a little extra help there. But you can tell by the way people look at your kid that they can see his heart.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives me hope that this world is going to be filled with more and more people who can understand who our kids are beyond any labels.
To understand.
And that they want to understand. But that they can see our kids are so much more than any box this world tries to put them in, and that they are capable of things, even as their parents, we could never imagine or hope for. Those people, to me, are saints of God.
No kidding. They are the angels of this world, for sure.
And constantly remind me that we should all be looking at each other through God's eyes and try to see each other as God sees them.
Yep.
Clayton is a beloved child of God. Evan is a beloved child of God. It doesn't matter whether or not they can make a profession of faith with words. It doesn't matter what their church attendance or membership is. That is not how God sees this world. And so I think one of the things we have the privilege of at our best as parents of special needs kids is saying, can you see my kid through God's eyes?
And those kids, they're not just because they're special needs kids. That's every single child. So you just want your child also to be seen by other people. Both, any of our children, we want them seen. So that is a special way to put it. Thank you for saying it too.
Oh yeah, and I should say, Cohen is a beloved child of God.
Listen, absolutely. Mom, what about me?
I think this wraps up. I hope this taste of hope will encourage you to listen to our next episodes, where we will talk about rewriting the story that the world tells us about our children, and about practices of hope that sustain us, that keep us going, and could keep you going too. I'd like to thank my fellow moms, Jessica and Jennifer, for joining me on this podcast. I'd also like a special thank you to Diakonos Solutions and the Synod of the Son for the scholarships they have granted me on this doctoral journey to work at this intersection of faith and special needs. Next time, join us for rewriting El Quinto.